Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Thanks for tuning in to the Shame-Free Zone. This is Veronica Monet, and my guest tonight is Francesca Gentile. Welcome to the show, Francesca.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, I am too. I didn't post our topics online, so for our listeners, we've got some really exciting topics tonight. We're going to be talking about shamanism, but shamanism as it applies to sexuality, right?
Right.
Yeah, and rather than read your credentials off, which, you know, we haven't actually met, so I prefer to do personal introductions. So I'd like you to tell us a little bit about yourself, because I'm still just getting to know you myself.
Oh, well, thank you, sweetheart. I really appreciate that. And,
yeah, I can't just throw that ball in your court there.
Yeah. So what do I want you to know about me?
And let's start by giving our listeners your website. They should have it.
They should have that. It's www.personallifemedia.com. I'm going to give you two. One is that's for my show. I have my own radio show, which is Sex Tantra and Kama Sutra, bringing you the soul of sex. And so they would look for that. And then my personal website is www.lifedancecenter.com.
Life Dance, yes. And that's a beautiful website. I think it's a great website.
Thank you.
Life Dance. So what does that mean exactly?
Well, to me, it means that sexuality, intimacy, when has a flow or a stop to it. Often we feel stopped and stuck in our relationship patterns. But there's these moments that we experience that really are this flow or this dance. So that really all of life can be a sense of flow, a sense of dance, a sense of melding into something. We hopefully meld into the music, we meld into our partner, we meld into our choices. The Life Dance Center is that concept is that all of life is a dance, and we want to become good dancers at it.
So are we kind of hitting around about the spontaneity?
You know, it's more than spontaneity. I would say that it's about soul or spirit. And, you know, not everyone is, it's not about religious. It's not, you can have a particular religious path. You might not think of yourself as having a religious path. And there's these moments of, Deepak Chopra calls it synchrodestiny. We might call it synchronicity. The Etruscans also talked of it as a sense of destiny, is that we're born with a purpose, with an intention of our spirit in being born, and that when we really tune into that, we listen very closely, almost like me listening very closely to you or you listening very closely to me, is that something arises from that. The next question, if we're having a conversation that's that deeply authentic or intimate question, if we're really in that sense of deep presence with another person, rather than a performance, sexuality becomes, you know, something arises. It just feels natural to move my hand from their hip to their breast. It feels very natural to move in for a kiss or a bite. And I'm not thinking about it. There's just a sense of rightness. And that sense of rightness and just the right thing at the right moment can also come into our life where it's not just spontaneity. It's, you know, really is, should I, not even a should, it's time to change a job. I think we've all gotten that moment where we get an offer. It could be an offer for a job, an offer to travel, an offer for a kiss, an offer to read a book. And our whole being just says, yes, this is, I'm meant to do this. I'm called to do this. And we learn to listen ever more deeply for that sense of call, that sense of rightness. So it's not just spontaneity. It's really a tuning in. To me, spontaneity has more of a sense of I'm going to do what I want to do when I want to do it, and almost a little bit more of a sense of will or maybe a little bit of sense of rebelliousness. Mm-hmm. And What we're talking about has a deeper sense of tuning into something.
I was trying desperately to describe what you're talking about in my book, Sex Secrets, and all I could come up with at the time was intention. That it wasn't so much what you're doing as why. And if you know what it is you want to create, that's what you're actually showing up for energetically. Does that at all touch upon what you're talking about?
Well, I love that you said that, Veronica. I think that is really quite delicious and often missed. You know, I would say it from the Eastern tradition. We have the chakra system, the energy center. The Eastern traditions mapped the energy centers and meridians and pathways of the body, like Western medicine mapped blood flow and capillaries and organs like the heart. Well, Asian medicine mapped the energetic pathways and the energetic organs, in a sense, which are the chakras. So we have a second chakra right above the penis for a man, right at the mound of Venus, that little mound for women. And that center is not, it's called the erotic center, but it's not erotic just like sex. It's erotic like life force, like the actual force of life and creation. So it's also the creative center. Now, quantum physicists have shown us that the smallest unit of matter is actually thought, so that thought affects matter itself. So that's that sense of energy. So our thoughts matter. When we have sex, we're literally creating something every time we have sex, because it's our thoughts or our intention, our awareness, that will change the outcome, that will create not only something in the sexual act itself, but in the world. That's the foundation of sex magic, what we're thinking when we're having sex. And so it's that sense of conscious intention, conscious awareness in anything. And the Zen masters say, you know, what did you do before you were enlightened? You chopped wood and you carried water. What did you do afterwards? You chopped wood and you carried water.
Yeah.
But what made it different was a sense
of consciousness and
intention. So, Veronica, you're absolutely delicious, and I completely agree that energy follows intention.
We're obviously kindred spirits and obviously very passionate about this topic, and we just dove right into it. And you didn't do a very good job of introducing yourself, so I'm going to take over here and let everybody know that you are the director of the Life Dance Center for Integrative Arts and Sacred Living. You're a sacred sex coach. You are a shamanic intimacy and bodywork practitioner. You're a clinical sexologist, a relationship counselor, a nonviolent communication trainer, and a cross-cultural minister. Woohoo, girlfriend, get down. and then you're also a section leader, not just a member, but a section leader for ASECT. For people who don't know, ASECT is the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. That's a credential I really want to get, but I don't have yet. And a board member of the Sunrise Center in Corte Madera. You do phone coaching nationwide and in-person sessions in the San Francisco Bay Area. How did I do?
Stunning. I want to hire you as my personal PR person.
I want to get a few of those credentials. I like mine, but yours are just off the chart.
Oh, you know, I think mine are probably yours. I feel that we're definitely sisters in spirit in this, so feel free to, you know, grab any of mine you like that feel like they resonate for you.
Well, I'm a certified sexologist. What's a clinical sexologist? What's the distinction there? Have you actually done research?
It's very similar. And I just love your questions. I love that you asked that, because I want to invite our listening audience to be researchers right along with me, and you can write or call Veronica or I about your research, because I think that we all get to be field researchers of our own life, and that there's a point where we, you know, what's the difference between having a life and being a field researcher of your life, is that a scientist, a researcher, we have a theory. If I, you know, kiss someone on the neck, up and down their neck, like, you know, Gomez did in the Munsters, if this person will swoon into my arms. That's my theory. So now let me see if that's going to work. I'm going to kiss some people up and down the side of their neck. What happens? Oh,
well,
look,
if I kissed my neck, I would do exactly that.
You know, it worked 20% of the time. Is that a good enough statistic to keep replicating the data?
Right.
I also got slapped 80% of the time. So what do I think? So we're not only having a life, we're looking at patterns. We're looking at data. We're literally looking at the data of our own sex life. And I love the idea of being a field researcher in the bedroom, because if I say to my beloved, I would love to experiment with, you know, kind of be a researcher, an experimenter, I don't think I know my own body fully and what really, you know, where the fullness of my pleasure lies. And would you be willing to help me experiment with discovering what really arouses my body? There's no pressure there, because even if something happens that's wrong, quote-unquote wrong, or doesn't work, I can say, thank you, that didn't work. I can put that into my data file. That is ineffective on my body. No one fails. So, and for myself, what I would say, have I done research at a university? No. And have I done research in my life? Absolutely. And I invite us all to do this. And the term clinical researcher was actually given to me, or the clinical sexologist was given to me by my mentor at ASEC, who said that based on my trainings, based on the amount of hours that I'd spent counseling others, that was a term that he waved his magic wand and said that this is a term that
works in ASEC.
You know, this is a term you're authorized to use.
They do wave their magic wand.
They do. And I would say for all of us that I'm waving my magic wand right now, and that all of you can be field researchers of your own sex and love life and really start gathering data around your own patterns, around human beings. You are the common denominator in all of your experiments of life and sex.
I love that you're saying that, because I somebody was actually kind of complaining about the letters after my name. And saying, you know, I don't care about that, you know, because, you know, whatever you need to learn about sex, you learn from doing it. And they kind of had a contempt for people who are studying the topic. And for myself, and I'm sure you're the same, you know, from, you know, what I know about you, you're not somebody who's just studying books and commenting about it from an armchair. You're actually out there doing it. I've got, like, 2 decades of very intense field work, hands-on experience, which I wouldn't even want to think about having the academic education without that. However, after 2 decades of hands-on, it was still, you know, very enlightening to get the academic background, because what you end up having if you don't get the academic background is anecdotal information, and you have run the risk of only attracting people that are going to be, you know, playing the way you want to play. So like a whole bunch of interesting experiences and perspectives that you just wouldn't get.
I would say it's a both and, or an and both, versus an either or.
Yeah.
So if someone has, you know, any of our listeners out there feel that they have been great researchers, have had many lovers, many experiences, very, you know, or have really explored in relationship in various ways and feel like they have gathered their own data of really learning, growing, not just repeating the same patterns over and over again, but really finding in their own research new data that expands their intimate capacity and their sensual capacity. Well, I want to hear from them, because I think that that's wonderful. And as what Veronica is saying, I would totally concur, there's something to be gained by also reading from the experts, by taking classes from the experts. And in the Seven Arrows teaching of Native American tradition, they say there's many ways to learn. And one of them is from experience. Another one is from mistake. And the sort of the evolution on the, they often talk in terms of shields or wheel, the evolved place of the shield is to learn from wisdom. And wisdom literally means learning from the experience of others, that I've attained wisdom at the point where I can be learning from the experience of others. And I remember there were years where I used to almost kneel down and pray, may I please learn from wisdom, not experience. May I please learn from wisdom, not experience.
Oh.
Because there were years when my life was pretty, I would say, dramatic and traumatic.
Oh, I get it. So you wanted to move away from just doing all that field research, because that can be an expensive thing to do, too. On your nerves and your life.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which is great. I mean, if you wind up with a professional like yourself or myself who's got the experience and the academic background, you can't avoid making some mistakes.
And I would say that for myself, I feel that I absolutely teach and coach from the integrity of my own experience, that I feel that I am walking a guide that walks with others, that has some mastery, but I will never have total mastery. I will learn as much at times from people that I'm coaching in various ways as they might be learning from me. I honor their own wisdom. I honor their own life experience. And that there's a sense that my life is always my training ground. So I'm not going to, you know, I might say this teacher or that teacher does this and they consider, or this book or these findings say. Right. On the other hand, I'm also going to say this is road tested. You know, I took this one out and road tested it. And I can tell you that it works for me like this. And once again, you're not me.
So no, absolutely.
Well, exercise, change anything. Anything I tell you that doesn't work for you, throw it out.
So I got a really hot question for you. But first of all, I want to check in with the listeners and remind them we've got an amazingly credentialed woman here. She's just got every conceivable credential around sex that you can imagine. And Francesca Gentile is her name. And she's from the Life Dance Center. And if you call in, you can ask her anything you want right now for free. And trust me, her time is very expensive. So if you want to talk to her for free, call us toll-free in the United States at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. And for our listeners in Canada, you can call free at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. You can't beat that. It's a free phone call and free advice from our clinical sexologist here. Now, Francesca, I have a question for you, and I think our listeners might really want to know this. Isn't sex just something we're born knowing how to do? Why on earth would you want to get advice or take a workshop or work over this telephone? And for that matter, what could you possibly do over the telephone regarding sex?
Well, my mind goes in a number of different directions with that, with what you can do over the phone with sex. However, in this case, what we're talking about in terms of counseling, why? Why bother? Isn't this the most natural thing in the world? And I would say that on one hand, of course, you know, it's natural to have sexual urges. It's natural to, it's almost like this homing beacon that we have for one another's genitalia. When, and how to insert tab A into slot B, when nothing else is in the way. And if all we wanted to do was insert tab A into slot B. But we human beings are more than that, you know, brain stem at the back of the neck, at the top of the spine, where we have our fight, flight, freeze, or fuck. You know, they would call it the reptilian brain at the very back of the head, the earliest evolutionarily of the human brain. We're more than that. We're an emotional limbic system. Where, which is where we have that sense of emotion, connection. The brain has mirror neurons where we actually feel and reflect with another person. We have our, you know, up in the forehead, we have our frontal lobes, they call it, the frontal part of the brain, which is our discernment, our thinking. So sex is more. Sex is it's such a simple little word. It has three letters. But it includes all of our hopes, all of our dreams for bliss, for healing, for intimacy, for being seen, for being felt, for, you know, for having a sense of belonging, for having a sense of ongoing pleasure. I mean, there's so much that we put into this little three-letter word. And that, the depth and complexity of what we really want to give to another person and how we really want to be received from, you know, from them and what we want to receive from them is so huge. And that takes some training. I wouldn't expect, neither would you, to be a good driver, to be a master at anything, whether that's painting or cooking or building or computers. I wouldn't expect to be a master of anything without spending some time, usually in some training, in possibly some research, in learning from some experts. If I truly wanted to be a master at something, I would expect that. And I think certainly if all we want to do is put tab A and slot B, don't talk to Veronica, don't talk to me, you know, just, you know, go around, you know, you can figure that out. Have fun. However, if what you want is something that's more, I might say, full bandwidth, more depthful, includes, meets some of these other needs for being seen and met and fulfilled and bliss and ecstasy or ejaculatory mastery or depthful intimacy or any of those kind of more masterful concepts, more being the artist of love and sexuality, then now you want to talk to an expert.
And
you
know,
can do that over the phone. You can do a lot of that over the phone.
I was thinking about today while I was driving around on this beautiful Labor Day, I was thinking about how, you know, I used to work in corporate jobs, and they always sent us off for training. And it wasn't like we hadn't had training on these topics before, but there was just this assumption that to be good at your job, you should always be taking some form of training. And I think about how, you know, we always develop new technology. People are getting new cell phones all the time or new computers all the time, and then they have to learn brand new, you know, whatever, command software for that particular technology. But we just have this assumption that when it comes to relationships and sex, once you learn the basics, you're done for the rest of your life. And to me, that is just so sad because it's, you know, I've been studying it now for a couple of decades, and I'm not done learning. There's so much more I want to know. There's so much more that I want to experience. And to me, sex is another aspect of my life that is an evolutionary journey, and it should never have an end point.
I mean, yes, absolutely. Why, wouldn't it be boring to think I'm done? I've learned all there is to learn about
right.
sex. I think that would be sad and depressing.
Well, and you know, unfortunately, some people look at it that way. They'll think, well, I've got erectile dysfunction or, you know, I've gone through menopause, and therefore my sex life is over. So what would you tell people in particular who are aging about sex? How can sex can be even more exciting at 80 than it was at 18?
You know, I would say yay in the background because I absolutely believe and experience that sex is getting better and better for me and the people that I'm with as I age. So I'm 51, and I find that especially in the, I would call them sacred sexuality techniques, but we could also call them energy techniques. We could call them consciousness techniques, that there are verifiable, practical techniques of breathwork, of very simple in many cases, of breathwork, of focusing, of communication, of touch, that when we start to practice these, enhance our sex life, expand our intimacy. And I've seen over and over again that men who felt that they had, you know, either premature ejaculation or erectile dysfunction, that when they practice these techniques, they will have a better, more intimate, more fulfilling sex life, be it more at choice around their when they have an erection, how long they maintain it. And this, of course, is barring if there's literally something medical. So I would always invite people to, you know, check your hormone levels, your testosterone levels, your adrenals, your cortisol, your estrogen, your thyroid, you know, to get some, our glands, our hormonal glands shrink as we age. And depending on your genetic makeup, you're going to be predisposed or more likely to have some glands shrink a little faster than the person next to you, which will throw off your libido or throw off your blood flow. Often erectile dysfunction, getting and maintaining an erection, can be an early precursor to heart disease. So we want to make sure that that's taken care of first. We know that the body is technically healthy. Now, given that it's technically healthy, aging becomes an opportunity to have the best sex that we've ever had in our lives because as the hormones slow down slightly and we don't have that, you know, that directive of like, fucking make babies. Now we can start to connect in the Asian energy system again, the energy pathways, we can start to connect all of our energy centers, literally, with our genitals. So instead of just feeling like we have this kind of squeeze and burst orgasm or ejaculation, we start to feel these waves of delicious erotic energy flowing through our whole bodies. And they've done studies on this, how having this kind of high states of arousal for more than 45 minutes really boosts the immune system, really improves clarity in the brain, really raises hormonal levels like testosterone for sometimes several days. It's so good for the body and for aging. And by high states of arousal, I don't mean that it has to be intercourse for 45 minutes. It can be petting, caressing, long, slow caresses. I'm actually caressing my breast right now, down my side, slowly, down my hip. You know, as I'm doing this in a nice, slow stroke, doing that again, now it's down by my hip, now I'm starting to at my breast again, going slowly down my side, all the way down to my hip. As I'm doing this, it releases oxytocin. If I'm doing this for myself, it releases oxytocin. If I'm doing it for you, ooh, baby, it releases oxytocin. And oxytocin gives us a sense of well-being, a sense of deep bonding and connection. So for those who might be listening who don't have a lover, take that 45 minutes as a wonderful physical discipline, not better than working out, but equally as good to working out in many ways, is that being your own lover, caressing your whole body, head to toe, getting out that massage lotion, really taking some time from your face, I'm caressing my face right now, down the breast, chest for your man, you know, really, and not focusing immediately on the genitals, this looks slowing the breathing. You know, nice, deep, relaxed belly. If you don't have a partner, this is going to be so great because it's going to increase blood flow. You're going to start looking more radiant. You're going to start, you know, having the sense of walking down the street not feeling like you're totally depleted every time you go out. And you'll become a magnet for others. If
so
you're with
you
a partner,
at least
great.
45 minutes of this. So would it be best?
I think, you know, I would say, you know, could you, 15, if you only have 15, do it for 15. If you only have 20, do it for 20. I don't want to set a bar that's so high that people feel like I never have 45 minutes.
I never have 45 minutes. Well,
you know, our working mothers out there.
If you wanted to do the 45 minutes, and is the objective to not have an orgasm?
You know, I personally love orgasms. Delicious.
Who does?
Whether it's myself or my partner. However, I wouldn't say the objective is not to have an orgasm. However, it's to not maybe rush towards an orgasm. So rather than the orgasm is this thing, you know, that there's this train that you know, we're looking at our clock and it's supposed to be at the next station in 15 minutes, you know, and gall darn it, you know, goddamn it, the train has to be on time. You know, rather than having this charging towards something, now maybe it's a beautiful day and we're sailing. You know what I mean? Like we're just sailing.
Right.
It's a gorgeous day. We're sailing. Maybe we're going to get, you know, go and have a picnic over there when we get there. Maybe we won't get there. Maybe we're going to go somewhere else instead. So there's more of a sense, as you said earlier, of a journey, of an exploration, of a discovery. And then there, you know, could very possibly be a point somewhere in the journey where, yeah, we're going to get to that station. We're going to get to an orgasm for either myself or my beloved. But rather than at first, it's kind of at last. And after that wonderful experience of, you know, breathing and sensuous and exploring one another's bodies, and it's just going to feel so much fuller and richer when we get there at last than if we rush to it at first. And I'm also a proponent of sacred quickies. So I'm the girl of paradox, the both and. We started there around both and in the beginning of a researcher or an experiencer, you know. So I'm a both and. Is sacred quickies great? That still that presence, that intention, that connection, it can go very quickly. And yet I would say at least every couple weeks to take some time, you know, preferably at least once a week, you know, more often if you're lucky, but to set aside a good, I actually recommend for couples 2 hours. If you're with yourself, you know, 45 minutes, half an hour, 45 minutes. But if you're with a couple, a good 2 hours, get the babysitter, do something so you can just relax into a place of timelessness for a couple of hours and be on that journey together.
I love it. Listeners, we've got Francesca Gentile with us tonight, and she is a sacred sex coach among many other credentials. You can talk to her for free tonight. Just call us toll-free in the U.S. at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. If you're in Canada, toll-free is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. 5, 6. And speaking of sacred sex, could you give us a definition of that? What makes some sex sacred and some just sex?
When I ask my, you know, my students, my coaches across the country, what makes anything sacred, they'll usually say it's a sense of something being set apart, special, precious. That when we have that, sometimes we walk into something in nature, that cathedral of trees, and we just breathe. We slow down and we breathe. And we take in that sunset. And it feels special. It feels precious. The birth of a child, the first admission of love to someone that we adore. It's just something very, very special and precious. Now, in the tradition that I come from, we would say that everything is sacred. Everything is always sacred. However, we have spiritual practices, even religion, let's say, to remind us, to give us techniques and exercises to remind or reconnect us to the sacred that is always there. The actual root word, the root of the word religion is the Latin religare, or to reconnect. So the sacred is already there, and then we reconnect to it. So, if that's so, but it just is a premise, we'll try this on. Everything is always sacred. Sex is actually already always sacred. However, we human beings, free will, have a choice. We forget, we remember, we forget, and we can bring hurtfulness to sex. We can bring, you know, a sense of wounding to sex. However, we can also reconnect to the sacred in sex quickly, in a sacred quickly or slowly. And we have practices that all the great teachers throughout the world will share. Some have unique ones, but many of them are similar. We remember to breathe. Relaxing the jaw, relaxing the belly. Not just a fast chest breathing, but a breathing that goes deep into our body. This starts to reconnect us to our body and that sense of the sacred, that sense of being here together. We have in sacred sexuality, we have that moment of looking into one another's eyes. They say the eyes are the window of the soul. Really letting, when I'm mad at my partner, I won't look at him. I won't look at him because the minute I look at my partner, I realize, oh my God, this is the person I love. Look at him. Oh my God. And then I can't be mad. So I have a tendency not to look. You know, you can do field researches with me. Figure out if you do this, you look away when you're mad at someone. So we have a sense of looking into the soul of another person, a practice. Our breathing, a practice, a sense of slowing down. If people who meditate, we can let it be a meditation, clearing the mind, just letting ourselves, noticing our thoughts, but letting them go so we can be fully present to the moment. And then we have a sense for those of us who pray. We could bring prayer into it. May this next 15 minutes, 10 minutes, this time that I'm sharing with you, Veronica, may it bring peace and healing to ourselves, to all of our listeners, to the world. I can say that to my beloved, or I can say that in my own mind. May this touch I bring you bring connection and healing. Mm. So there are practices that reconnect us to the sacredness that's actually always there. And I would say that what makes sex sacred is when consciously or unconsciously these practices show up. And I say unconsciously because I've had many workshops with people when I'll ask the room, how many people, you can ask our listeners, how many people have had an experience in sexuality where time slowed down or stopped? It felt like it was hours that you were making love and you looked up and it was maybe half an hour, or you thought it was a couple of hours and it was all afternoon. Yeah. Or you felt like you and that person, you didn't even know where they began and where you ended, and it felt like you were both in ecstasy and both in orgasm. You know, when have you had that moment where maybe outdoors or in nature where you felt like you were actually part of nature itself, making love or creating? When you've maybe had gotten pregnant and that moment of conception when you felt something expand inside your heart and your body. And when I ask a room full of people, I would say a good two-thirds, sometimes more of the room, will have had an experience that I would call sacred or expanded sexuality. And then we look at it and we say, what led up to that? Was it that moment of recognizing that life was happening? Was it that moment of breathing in the sunset while you were making love? And then we take out of that and say, these are the practices that the Buddhists talk about, or these are the practices that the Hindus talk about. But what you discovered by accident is actually a sacred sexual practice that now that we've brought our awareness, our attention to it, you could choose it. You could choose it more often. Rather than by accident, now you have some sort of mastery or choice with it.
I love that you started off by saying that sex is sacred, period. But that we have sometimes forgotten that it's sacred, and we have found ways that we can hurt each other through sex. That was just so beautifully put. The best explanation that I've ever heard. I also, you know, as far as people having transcendent sexual experiences, I'm sure you're aware of Jenny Wade's book, Transcendent Sex, When Lovemaking Opens the Veil. And what I loved about her book is that she did not take stories from people who, you know, like you or myself, have been pursuing sacred sexual techniques. She just interviewed people who have never taken a tantric class in their life, and there were all these amazing experiences that people had had during sex, quite by accident.
So I say that we talked about in the beginning, so that idea of why does anyone need training in sex? Because sex is, you know, encoded in our DNA, fucking make babies, it's right back there in the reptilian brain, in that brainstem. I actually say that sacred sex is encoded in our DNA, that it's part of who we are as human beings, as Homo sapiens sapiens. It's part of that thirst for transcendence is encoded in us. And if you look cross-culturally, all cultures have been striving for these practices that reconnect them or remind them of the sacred. All cultures actually have sacred sexuality. If you know where to look, there's the archaeological shard of sacred sexuality in every culture. And if you people, like she did, you find this natural tendency when something else doesn't get in the way, like our inner critic or, you know, other training that we may have gotten personally or culturally that has us fear sex or has us fear intimacy, that if we're actually, that flow is there, that dance is there that we talked about in the beginning, then sacred sex is there, natural.
Hmm. Part of our DNA. You know, what do you think about some of the ecstatic religions, people who do speaking in tongues, Shakers, Quakers? I've heard some people posit that some of these religious experiences are actually another form of sex, or another form of sexual energy.
Yes and no, and yes, and perhaps no and yes, is that we talked about Eros as the life force. This sense of the life force. And if we, let's even go even a little different in that. In the Bible, originally in the Old Testament or the Torah, they talk about spirit as breath. And as wind. And then as it goes through the Old Testament into the New Testament, it loses a little bit of a sense of breath and wind, and it becomes a little bit more of light. It becomes, it has a sense of a slightly different way of looking at it. But if we look at it once again as this sense of breath, this sense of wind, it's a sense of that it's the spirit that comes into the body. It's this breath of, you could say, the divine that comes into the body that actually creates life itself. If we take it out of, you know, the sperm and the egg, so to speak. But we say, what is it that creates the uniqueness of each individual, if it's beyond just their genetics and just their environment? And I was adopted, so I got to be my own personal study on nature versus nurture, or genetics versus environment. And my birth mother found me when I was 35. So I really got to look at it and say, well, what part of me was, you know, genetically predisposed, and what part of me was environmentally affected? And then what's that spirit, that X quality that's me? And there's this thing that really is our spirit. Well, that spirit has the opportunity to move through us, the creative life force, into art, into cooking, into working, into playing Monopoly with my child. We've all had transcendent, amazing experiences, sometimes in the simplest things, fishing, cooking. And it's something that can move into sexuality. Cross-culturally, when there is enough spirit moving, we end up with, in Christianity, what we call the gifts of the spirit, speaking in tongues, healing, prophesying, the sense of the body shaking or quivering. Can it happen through prayer and breathing and opening consciously and intentionally, opening our hearts to that concept of God that we're sharing in this community of church? Yes. Can it happen in Africa, in Brazil, in the Caribbean? If we're dancing and drumming, can we experience this as we connect with our sense of the divine in those moments, in the bembe, in that sacred environment that we're having? Can it happen in the bedroom? Absolutely. And my sense is it's a quality of voltage, if you can think of it that way, mm-hmm. that there's like high volt or low voltage. And when we get to a certain level of voltage of this life force, this energy force, cross-culturally, certain things show up like spontaneous healings, like the ability to prophesy, like a sense of expansiveness throughout time, like a sense of being connected in our hearts to all people.
And being one. Being one.
Being one. Being yeah. one. Yeah. And there's many ways to get there. Some of them are in bed and some of them aren't.
Very well put. Callers, if you have some questions for Francesca, please call in toll-free in the U.S. at 877-876-5227. That number again is 877-876-5227. And in Canada, toll-free, it's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Francesca Gentile, very, very educated, experienced, and informed woman. If you have any questions at all, please, this is a fabulous opportunity to pick her brain free of charge. You're going to tell us a little bit about shadow. Now, what does that mean, and what does that have to do with sacred sex, or does it have something to do with sacred sex?
I pause. It's such a big question.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, and it's interesting that I have this moment of hesitation because the shadow is such a rich area. Imagine that there's a cave nearby that is, you know, when people go in there, they always find treasure. They always find some sort of gems or jewels or gold doubloons, or they really do find something amazing in there. And yet, it's a cave. People do get lost. Sometimes people die. It's very dark. It's never been fully mapped. And sometimes there are snakes, you know, if you step on them, they could bite you. There's things that can happen as you go into that dark. It's not bad. It's not evil. It's neither bad nor evil. However, it's not completely safe, and yet at the same time, there's these amazing treasures to be found there. Well, imagine that that's our psyche. That's our soul. That we all have. You know, we only use 10% of our brain consciously. I think some of us might, so on some days I probably use less. And there's this cave, there's this place of what I don't know that I don't know. There's this shadow realm that when I go into it, it's a little scary. You know, I could get lost. I could get depressed. I could get anxious. I could be very frightened by what I find along the way. And yet, when I go in there, I'm always going to find treasures. Now, the shadow area is, we consider in many cultures, cross-culturally, Judaism starts their day at sunset. The Celtic people start the new year at October 31st in the dark of the year. Why? Because originally the dark was thought as the fecund, the fertile womb, and that things were birthed out of the dark. They were birthed out of this fertile womb. It's a very new concept that only the light is good. And so we have this ancient concept that the light is good and the dark is good, and there's just this richness there and this birthing and rebirthing. So now when I'm in our, I believe that in our world today, most of us end up experiencing some amount of losing parts of ourselves in the dark, in the shadow. What do I mean by that? Let's say, and this would be true for me, I grew up as a nice girl. I grew up in a family that nice girls weren't supposed to get angry. So I lost the ability to get angry. Anger is a function. I no longer had anger as a function in my life. Anger is a teacher. It's a warning system. I couldn't get angry. And then I was actually spanked, you know, the hairbrush, the paddle, the belt, et cetera, when, for many things, including when I cried. Some of us have heard, don't cry or we'll give you something to cry about. And then we would be given something when we cried. So I lost the ability to cry. So my sadness was a missing function. My sadness, also one of my warning systems, my teachers, now lost in the dark. Some of us lose memories. We lose our creativity in the dark. Let's say I was creating something in my mother's kitchen, and she comes in and yells at me and tells me what a mess I made. Now I lose my creativity in the dark. So now I'm trying to have a relationship with my beloved, and I'm disconnected from my body. He feels that I'm kind of cold. He doesn't understand what my feelings. I don't either. I feel sort of dead in my own life or confused. Why? Because I lost pieces of my soul self in the dark, in the shadow realm, in that cave. And so I believe that sacred sexuality, to me, in our world today, with so much wounded and conflicted messages about aging, death, emotion, the body, our genitals, sexuality, with so many negative and conflicted messages about that that we grow up with, let alone if we're the 40%. That were raised in families that were emotionally, physically, and or sexually abusive, 40%, that's practically every other person, even if we're the 60% that weren't, we will have been raised in a culture that taught us to cut off parts of our authenticity, that have encouraged us to lose our functionality, and we become dysfunctional. I no longer can cry. I can no longer get angry. I can no longer speak my truth or know what it is. So the if I love you, and I'm in relationship with you, and I hold this in compassion in my heart, and you hold that in compassion with me, and now we're in our bedroom, we can do this shadow work through our sexuality. I sometimes say, thank God I have a sex drive. Thank God I have a love drive. Because if I weren't driven to love and driven to have sex, I would never do my work. I would never go into those dark places. I would never heal because it's scary. I don't want to have to face my anger. I don't want to have to reclaim my sadness. Mm. I don't want to necessarily even want to know what my truth is because maybe my truth is going to separate me from you. So it's only in this call, this drive to connect with you, and in the research of my own life where I realize how many I'm blowing up my relationships and they're failing or I'm picking the wrong person, that I finally am willing to do this shadow work. And then I bring a tenderness and compassion to you, and we start to do it together.
Okay, so I understand what you're talking about, because I teach a workshop called Relationship Repair and Sex Coaching, and I have worked with couples around some pretty difficult stuff. And they come to the workshop fully expecting that they're going to have sex with their partner, and they are. But it's like a 4 to 5 hour workshop. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be teaching up at Harbin Hot Springs on the 11th of September. But a lot of the dynamics, we spent like the first 2 hours, sometimes 2.5 hours, working on relationship issues. And I go straight into, I want to find the most annoying thing in your relationship right now. And people are like, wait a second, I brought the lube, I brought the condoms, we got our bed here with us, and now you want us to have a fight.
Girl.
So, you know, it's not very sexy. Usually they come in, they're wearing their sexiest clothes, and now they're crying. And they're not sure what the hell's going on here, but we've had some amazing breakthroughs. I mean, people who hadn't been able to experience certain sexual events, like a female ejaculation, or because they had bottled up their anger. And that's primarily what I work with, is helping people go in and find their no and their rage and their anger and get past that in a way that's constructive, and then find out that on the other side of that is amazing sexual response that's being held back.
Absolutely. I think I'm falling in love with you more and more over this call.
Oh, we absolutely have to meet in person. I'm coming out to the Bay Area. specifically to me too.
Okay, great. And what I want to say to our listening audience is what Veronica pointed to, it's so rich, is that if we start to suppress, you know, let's play it safe here. I'm going to just suppress a little bit of my anger or a little bit of my fear or a little bit of my sadness. I mean, who wants those? And we can't just turn one emotion down.
No.
And not expect that our whole passion, our passion itself, is going to be turned down. I'm going to walk a little bit further away from my son's bedroom while I tell this story, is that when my son was 7 or 8, he came home and he said to me, "Mom, I'm so proud of myself." I said, "Why?" He said, "Because I taught myself not to cry."
Mm.
I said, "What?" And I said, "Why would you do that?" And he said, "Because the kids at school were making fun of me." I said, "Oh, honey, I can understand where it would feel unsafe to cry then at school, but I want you to know that you can bring your emotions here at home." Well, he couldn't distinguish that. He was only 7 or 8.
Right.
He shut down his all of his sadness. He no longer cried. And one day when he was 13, and if anybody has children or teenagers, they know these are these drive-by conversations where they don't sit down for an hour and a half. It's very quick. He said, "Mama, I didn't know what would happen when I shut down my sadness." And I said, "Honey, what happened?" And he said, "Well, I shut down all my emotions except one." And I'm thinking, it's anger. That's
yeah.
So typical for men. They
right.
shut down their sadness, they shut down their fear, and then they're left with anger.
Yeah.
And, you know, which is, pardon me, the men, beautiful men who are listening, that is clearly a judgment. This can happen to women as well, where they shut down their emotions, they're left with anger, irritation, criticism. But often what I'm pointing to is that when we suppress our emotions, one emotion will end up being pervasive.
Yes.
Or will take on all the emotional charge of the rest of the emotions that we're suppressing. And what he said was it was fear. It's fear, Mama. And now I'm afraid of everything.
Oh.
And I said, "Oh, honey, you may not know this, but this is the work that Mama does." I said, I help people, you know, find these lost pieces, these suppressed things, and bring them back in a way that's safe. And I said, "So maybe someday, because someday you'll want to have a relationship with someone, and people connect around emotions. That's what we humans do. So maybe someday, instead of having them lost, and do you know where they are?" He said, "No." I said, "Maybe instead of having them lost somewhere we don't know where they are, they could be maybe behind a glass door or maybe a screen door with a glass door. So you can open them and close them and you can see them and other people can see them. And maybe there's even a dimmer switch where you can like turn them up and turn them down." And he said, "Mama, it's still not safe. It's not safe to bring forth my emotions." And I thought, oh, the teenage years, how hard, how cruel those years can be. I guess it's not safe. And I grieved. I grieve now. That he's only, 15, it's still not safe.
Oh,
well, some of us are, 25, 35, 45, 55, 65, and we never realize that we're adults, and that maybe it could be safe now. Maybe now is the time to work with our beloved or with someone who we trust to really bring back these emotions so we can live fully and connect with one another and be fully functional human
beings,
fully passionate.
Well, Francesca, I have to tell you, you are one of the most fully alive human beings that I've ever had a conversation with.
Woohoo!
You practice what you preach. God, I could talk to you all night. Unfortunately, I'm starting to run out of airtime. But, we've got a couple more minutes here, and I want to bring this home for people. The shamanism thing, where does that come into play with all this?
Well, shamanism is, once again, cross-culturally. There are some people that say, the Mongolians might say that only Mongolians can be shamans. However, if we look, or the Laplanders might say only Laplanders can be shamans.
Right.
However, if we look at the qualities of shamanism, the shamanic world of you, many of us already are shamans. A shaman believes that there are many levels of reality. That there is, I'm sitting at my kitchen table, there's a table level of reality. But there's also a level of reality that is the reality of intention, of the intangibles, like love, of even fear. There's a reality of spirit. There's a reality, perhaps, of our ancestors. That energy, that spirit of our own lineage, whether by blood or DNA or by energy in some way, can be with us. Many people will experience that they feel connected to or watched over by someone very dear to them who has died. There's a reality of, in the Shamanic view, it's animistic. The world is alive. It has that, once again, that energy, that chi, that prana, that ashe is in everything and has a signature. Like, I can learn from not only talking to you, but from being with you. Just being in your presence, I would learn something from the energy that you are, that I learn from the trees. I learn from the animals. In the shamanic tradition, the trees are our elder teachers, are the eldest teachers. The animals are also elder than us, that we are the younger ones. And so there's this multiple level of reality, and that our role as human beings is actually to tune into, in Asia they call it the Tao, the life force. You know, in Star Wars we'd say the force, that our intention is to tune into this beautiful flow of these tides and currents of soul, of spirit, of seasons, of life, and to be in harmony with that. And then a shaman is someone who says, where is there a disharmony? Because disease, a tumor, or a heart disease is downstream from a disharmony, upstream, a broken heart, a stress in the heart, and then later we have heart disease. So they look for, where is there a disharmony in a community? Where is there a disharmony in someone's spirit? And they look at, in these multiple levels of energy and reality, how can we bring harmony? And they might look at very practical, like changing the way that you eat in the kahuna shaman.
We've got a caller. Sorry about that, Francesca. Sweetheart, we're out of time.
That timeless time, we hit it.
Oh, my God. We have to have you back, please. Please.
I'd love that.
Please come back. And once again, the website is lifedancecenter.com. This is Francesca Gentile, an amazing, amazing woman. Please check out her website. Send her an email, and we'll definitely have you back on our show.
That would be my pleasure. Such a delight.
Thank you
so much.
Blessings.
Blessings.
Veronica Monet offers help, healing, and hope in the form of private telephone sessions. Email veronica@sexwithoutshame.com to schedule an appointment, or visit www.sexwithoutshame.com to find out what Veronica can do for you.
Join us on the People Speak